Okay, welcome to The Learning Curve with Roger and Virginia. The learning curve is about winning in life because all of life's a learning curve, but it begins in school with parents and kids in school. So this program is very much about helping our kids get good grades in schools and helping parents and teachers bring that about. So Virginia, you've got a very special guest today.
Yes.
Tell our audience about our special guest.
Yes, today we have Jenna Martinez with us. And Jenna is a center coordinator for Literacy Partners here in New York City. Jenna, can you please tell us something about what a center coordinator does?
Sure. Good afternoon, everyone. Basically, my job is to oversee the students that come into our center to learn to read and write, and also to support the volunteer tutors that teach them.
Prior to Literacy Partners, you worked in Texas. Can you tell us about your experience in Texas?
Sure. In Texas, I was also doing adult education. This was in the form of coordinating ESL classes, as well as teaching financial literacy to adults.
Jenna also confided in me and told me that she is very passionate about working with adults in adult education. Why is that?
You know, I've had the privilege to work with young children and teenagers and adults are my favorite. When I was teaching ESL in Mexico, I was teaching a woman, and I asked her, what are your goals in learning English? And she told me, I just want to be able to read to my daughter in the evenings. Mm. And that really moved me. And I from then, I just realized the importance of adult education. When you're working with adults and in helping them improve their life and their skills, they in turn can improve the lives of their children and
That's
their families.
Right. What we've found is that the children that do best in schools have parents who set the standard for the kids that the kids can then follow or aspire to.
Absolutely.
And terribly important.
In our book, How to Teach, How to Learn, Overcoming the Seven Barriers to Comprehension, we discuss personal methods of learning and ask teachers and parents to be aware of and work with these methods of learning. What personal methods of learning have you encountered with adult students?
You know, adult students are very different from working with children in many ways. Adults have different needs, and they come to an educational program for practical goals. They're goal-oriented, they're autonomous, and I think when adults come into the classroom, they really like to have that autonomy, to have that space to create, to learn, and to provide feedback to the teachers and to their classmates.
So you said that they're different from younger learners. In other words, young students that you've taught have a different learning method than older students?
Well, I'm not so sure that it's a different learning method, but I think their needs are different. I think that adults need that mutual respect as a fellow adult teaching. I think that they need to be able to share with their fellow students.
Right.
They have this whole life of experience and knowledge and school, and they're bringing that into the classroom, and it's really important that that is acknowledged and shared and really celebrated.
One of the things I would think with the adults is that, of course, they're motivated because they really have a purpose for this subject that they're addressing. One of the things we find with the younger students as a barrier to comprehension is if parents or teachers fail to make the child aware of the reason they should pay attention to the subject. What's the purpose for studying it? What's its value to them? Of course, it gets wasted. But adults who come in self-motivated, as they do to Literacy Partners, they have a purpose for the subject they're studying.
Absolutely.
Big time. Yeah.
They're trying to get a better job, to get their GED, to earn more pay, to help their children with homework, to master the English language. These are all goals that can help them have this, you know, tangible, better job, something that's going to improve them and that they can see the results of.
I was going to say something that opens up the world for them, really.
Absolutely.
By learning style, I think Virginia was asking the question in the context of the way in which they learn and what they do in order to learn.
Mm-hmm.
Tragically, in the conventional educational system, children are made to sit still, shut up, be quiet, and absorb. That's hard work. I mean, boring.
Yeah, so the teacher's bored, the student's bored, everyone's bored.
It's one-way flow, acuted effect, whereas with the adults, you better not do that to them.
No.
They'll walk out on you. They're big enough to walk out. So they're more active.
They're more active.
They do things a lot more. They actually probably fiddle a lot more with gear in order to work it out.
I think facilitative is the best approach. Yeah. Students have such a rich knowledge of things that is, you know, it's basically you're there and they're teaching each other. And you're just kind of leading the right direction.
Do you know, there's something written in the New York Times, I think it was, just last week. It might have been in the Science Times, come to think of it. And it was about an experiment carried out by some physics professors with physics undergraduates at college level physics course. They broke the class of 300 odd, 400 odd students into two groups, and one group they gave them the conventional sit down, shut up, listen and be talked to routine. They didn't do too well. And then the other group, they said, this is the theory on the subject, now let's go carry out the experiments and let's do an experiment based on this. Guess who got the better grades? No surprise. So that's a balance of the action and the application of knowledge rather than just the theoretical blotting paper absorption method of learning or non-learning.
Okay, well, thank you. You just took me right into my next question.
Oh.
Perfect segue. And I was going to say that, yes, teachers need to have a balance between the theoretical knowledge and the practical experience. What has been your experience with adult learners? Do you find they prefer to find the knowledge for themselves, or they like to have it given to them?
I think adults really like to discover the knowledge for themselves. I mean, it's such a joy to see that light going and to create that environment where students are thinking critically and learning the skill and how to get to that knowledge point. And I think they're doing this in daily life, whether they're working or they're functioning in society. They're, you know, facing challenges and they're getting through those by working them out in these spaces.
Right.
And I think that, you know, not only is it one of the, that it's this preferred way to uncover this knowledge in this space, but it's also a great skill to have that can go to any sort of issue and challenge that you face in your life.
That's true. I've noticed that these adult learners, as you said, they are functioning, they are solving problems every single day because they have to navigate through life. And so, yes, they definitely want to seek out the knowledge for themselves.
You just have to make that connection from the classroom to their daily life and how they're doing. Just connect those two things.
Yes.
They're already doing these things. So how can we apply it in the classroom?
Well, actually, what you're talking about there is one of the barriers to comprehension that we have found, and that is, what is the purpose and value of the subject? So what's the purpose? Why learn the subject, but also the value? And the value is, how is it relevant to their lives?
Absolutely. It's got to be relevant.
Back to learning styles. I was just thinking about students who are labeled learning disabled. Do you think that is a fair label? And do you think that they perhaps just have a different learning style, or what? What are your feelings on this?
I mean, I think anytime we put disabled onto a word, it's, you know, especially with learning disabled, we're saying that it suggests that there is one way and a correct way to learn. There is one style in which people learn, and that is the correct way, which clearly is not the case. People use a multitude of learning techniques to retain information. And absolutely, someone who is labeled learning disabled, there are certain challenges they may face to traditional teaching, but that just means that as teachers have to find a way to reach that student and meet them where they really are.
Yes.
Facilitate their style.
I completely
agree. We actually were in conversation with a PhD recently, a wonderful woman, who, when she was at school, was in essence labeled learning disabled. She was slightly dyslexic. She was able to handle that, but she's now gone on to PhD and so on and so forth, very successful career. And kids get mislabeled because basically most of them are getting mishandled.
Absolutely.
That's causing the problem. We're talking also on the phone with some folk who run a website called 3D Learners. These are people or children who, I'm no authority on their particular thing, where they're talking about right brain learners. That's like, I don't know about that. But certainly these children are holographic in their living life and in learning. And they do learn in a different way to your usual sit down, shut up, and absorb types. So it's a hell of a subject.
My last question is, do you have any do's or don'ts for parents when they're helping their kids with schoolwork?
Yes, I mean, helping with schoolwork, it means a great thing for the parents to be involved. Anyone, parents, sibling, to be involved in the schoolwork. And I think it's most important to be interested in what your child is learning. If you're interested, they're going to be more interested off the bat because they're going to feed off that energy. To ask questions, ask engaging questions, to really listen to what your child is working on. And I really like to have, you know, children teach. You know, teach the parent what they're learning. Yeah. You know, when you're teaching someone what you're learning, you're gonna have a deeper understanding of the subject. And I think it's just a great practice to always be incorporating with children.
Absolutely. Having to teach math for literacy partners made me have to go back and relearn my math. It's been a long time since I've done fractions and decimals and all that, and I had to relearn my math so I could teach it.
I'm really interested in picking up your book and you know, going through it, because I think that the more training that coordinators and teachers have, the more tools we can share. Just give us a wider range of tools to apply with our students and to work with. Thank you.
Would you mind if we tell the listeners about the little experiment we carried out in the kitchen on non-defined words?
Absolutely.
You would mind? Or
no,
actually,
no,
you
please,
don't mind.
Please share. Please share. I absolutely do not mind. Please share.
Well, folks, what happened, I was introducing Jenna to the material in our book, The Seven Barriers to Comprehension, and I wanted her to actually experience what one of the barriers is, and that's the barrier to do with non-comprehended or non-defined words and symbols and terms. And I explained that in the presence of non-defined words, words for which a student doesn't have a meaning, they become immobile and develop a mental fog, totally mentally blank, can't think, can't act, can't do anything, and just get dumbfounded. And I wanted to demonstrate this and make her experience it. I simply said, so here's the exercise, Jenna. I want you to demonstrate to me the concept. When the crepuscle came, the children had to come inside. And there was silence. There was an agonizing look on her face.
I froze up. And then I had the fog. And then I think, asked for help.
She was smart enough. She was able to come up from under all this and say, help. The first thing I checked was, well, do you have an understanding of what I mean by demonstrate? She got that one right. She was right on the ball there. But it obviously was the word I knew which would trick her up, which was crepuscle, which actually means twilight and the setting sun. So as the sun set, the children had to come inside. And suddenly, when all of this was defined, the actual words were defined, so she knew what they meant. What happened then, Jenna?
Well, then I raised my arms into a sun-like shape, and I brought them down. And then I was the child and the children, and I opened the door, and I walked through it, and I demonstrated after I had the definition of the confusing word.
And what happened in your mind?
Oh, it was very clear. It was there was no block. That fog had cleared. I was suddenly mobile again.
Right. The face totally changed, folks, I tell you that. It began to smile again. And you can carry out this little exercise for yourself. So we pass this on to you to make sure you don't belabor and sabotage your kids by using words on them and with them for which they do not have a meaning. If you're going to introduce new words, tell them what the word means. Otherwise, you are actually burying them.
So, Jenna, I know you said you have never worked with anybody who has dyslexia, but how about with someone who is a 3D learner, somebody who needs to actually manipulate objects and things?
Yes, I do have some experience working with younger children. When I worked with an after-school program in Texas, we had some children who had forms of autism. And I remember when we would do projects or assignments, verbal instructions were basically not they weren't just getting they weren't getting through. It was really about modeling, giving something tangible for the students to work with and to create. If not, the comprehension was the verbal wasn't enough. Comprehension was so the students comprehended best when they had something to work with,
to do,
something to do with their hands, with their eyes, something they could focus on besides just words.
Words on a page,
exactly.
It's actually quite Montessori because Montessori emphasizes the idea that when a teacher introduces a new concept or a new work, as they call it, you don't say anything. You don't explain anything. You simply demonstrate. You show exactly what you want the student to do. You pick up the tray, you put it down, you take each implement off in the order in which you're going to use it, you then clean up and you put the tray back. You model every single step of the way. So that's very interesting.
The in our book, we write about certain types of individuals who are very holographic. It was interesting, there's an article in, I think it's Forbes magazine, which we cite, or Fortune magazine, one or the other, and it cited about a dozen top CEOs of big companies. We're talking Sir Richard Branson and Charles Schwab, and the fellow who founded Kinko's, the guy who, the boss of Cisco, and so on and so forth. These are all, quote, dyslexic types. And the article goes into the way in which they think and use their minds, and it is actually different than the way what they call linear thinkers are. They use their minds in a holographic way, and in fact, one of the men that was cited was a fellow who invented a method for reading and deciphering DNA code, and he actually spiritually, mentally, as a hologram in his mind, built the equipment, envisioned it, made it work, fiddled with it, corrected it, made it work, and of course he sells this equipment now. And he was explaining to another ordinary kind of a person how he thinks. He thinks in color, three-dimensional images. And the other guy saying, "You what? What are you talking about? You don't think in words?" So we do have differences in people, and you better address them based on how does their mind and how do they work. One of the very great examples of this, by the way, most people don't know that, who was that great American inventor?
Edison.
Edison actually was thrown out of school as a youngster because he was too active and too disruptive. He only spent
These days he would have been medicated.
So he was thrown out of school, 3 months of school. So what happens is his mother taught him to read at home, and he thereafter educated himself in the local library. And he's a classic example of a doer, tinkerer, who makes things work by doing it.
He just did not fit into the box that the school system wanted him to fit into, right?
Yeah, exactly. Do it this way or you fail, which is very sad. So luckily, when your students who come back as adults, they have the chance to do it their way and win at it. It would be interesting actually to do a survey and find out what each of their learning styles is, or as a group, what the learning styles are for them, and is there a preponderance of three-dimensional learners who fritzed out in conventional school and come back as adults and get it? Because that student that we interviewed of yours, Virginia, he was on the ball. I mean, bright as a tack. I mean, I'm looking at and listening to this fellow, and I'm wondering, how could he have failed at school? He's so bright. Something went out. I don't think it was him.
So I have a question in that I have a particular student who seems to be a 3D learner. You give him a gadget and he's boom, 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 boom. He knows how to work it. He operates it. No problems. Obviously, he's not stupid, but he has a tendency to flip numbers and letters, and he can actually read. Sometimes he reads words into a sentence, and sometimes he skips the words as if he doesn't see them in a sentence. What do you think we could do for him?
I definitely think introducing different techniques. You know, I went to a trainer recently where she calls it like puppet theater. And what as a student is reading aloud for the other students, the teacher is actually doing some demonstrating, as you will, put on a show of what's going on in the story. And it's great because the students are starting to interact with the text through with you know, watching her interpret the reading. And also, if there's something that they don't maybe understand, maybe she can give them a clue through her acting it out. And I think it's a really great idea, and I'd really love to try that with our students, giving them something besides these words on a page, something that comes more alive.
I think that's a great idea. Now, you were telling me something about a game you tried the other day.
Yeah, so I've been opening the class with sort of a puzzle or a game, something to warm everyone up from they've just come in from their work day or what have you, and, you know, just to warm them up a little bit, fun way. And I thought, you know what, we've been working on synonyms, I'm going to do synonym bingo. You know, I thought it was a great idea, we'd play a game, but they would be, you know, tying in synonyms. And, you know, we've been reviewing synonyms, they've got synonyms down. I thought, perfect. Now I'm going to give them a challenge, and I'm going to go with some harder level vocabulary words with this. So I'm there, and I give them the bingo cards, and I'm very excited. And we go, and I realize right away that I went a little bit, I didn't back up enough. Even though they understood synonyms and they have a good grasp on them, I did not model the game for them. I didn't show them what we were going to do. I did not start at, I didn't back up enough to where they were at. Right. I thought I'm going to challenge them, but instead I just made them frustrated, and because I didn't do my homework enough.
It was what we call a bypassed or skipped gradient. Item of knowledge that had to be in before they could take the next step.
Absolutely.
It's a wonderful example. Okay, folks, this is the end of a good spot to end today's program with our Jenna. Thanks for being here, Jenna. It's been a lot of fun talking to you as a longtime pro in the game of educating both children and adults. So this is a wrap-up for today's program of The Learning Curve with Roger and Virginia. The Learning Curve, of course, being about how to succeed in life and help your children win at school. And we look forward to seeing you back here next week. Bye for today.